The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. 4 minutes past nine this Friday, the 8th of December 2023. You're very welcome along to another edition of the 9 till noon show. And it's your usual Friday mix of serious conversation, a bit of crack too, a little later on in the show. That's the entertainment coming up after 11. We've plenty to keep you entertained and informed between 10 and 11. And between now and 10, we have our Friday panel who are joining us to discuss some of the big stories of the week and indeed anything that emerged overnight. Okay, so let's say good morning to them right now. I'll say good morning first, if that's okay, to Brendan Byrne, CEO of the Irish Fish Processors and Exporters. Good morning, Brendan.
Good morning, Greg.
Great to have you with us. Michael McLaughlin's Branch Secretary of the Donegal Labour Party. Good morning to you, Michael.
Good morning, Greg. Nice to be back.
Let me see, where should we start? It's kind of returning to a topic we've discussed before, but I suppose it is one that's dominating conversations out there. During the week, the Rural Independent Group was heavily criticised amid heated scenes in the Dáil after putting forward a motion urging the government to change its reckless, as it described it, immigration policy. The motion called for an immediate cap to be implemented on the influx of asylum seekers and sought an explanation as to why unvetted single males, many from safe countries, are being accommodated in centres in small rural locations without any consultation whatsoever with local communities. Labour's Justice spokesperson Aidan O'Riordan said the motion was the lowest common denominator politics from a lowest common denominator political group. Well, a government counter motion to keep things as is passed without a motion, as only seven TDs were to vote against it, that being the six Rural Independents and Aintu's Padder Toby. And I'll start with you, I suppose, because you're up on the screen. Michael, do you believe that the Rural Independents got a fair hearing, or can you understand why things were so tetchy in the Dáil?
I think immigration is something that we've spoken about before, Greg, and I think it's something that's going to keep coming back and back. We have to be careful when we talk about immigration. And I think that's something that maybe didn't come across in the Dáil. But if we take it out to the wider events of the week, if we look at the poll that was in the Sunday Independent last week, where I think 46% of people said that they weren't comfortable to share publicly what their opinions on immigration were, or indeed the debate larger in the Dáil. And I think, you know, drawing on things that have happened in the last 2 weeks, we have to be careful when we talk about immigration and what exactly are we talking about. And I think when we talk about it publicly, there is a responsibility on all of us to debunk some of the stuff. And, you know, this unvetted men is something that I have a big issue with. You know, there is an asylum process. People are checked when they arrive in a country. It's not like, you know, we almost are talking about it like people wander up off the side of a beach and stop in the first place that they get. There is a process. People are checked. Anything that registers on international police checks or anything like that, people are returned. So the notion that unvetted scores of people are. But I think we also need to look at the benefits. And I think there's a problem in governmental messaging here that there are great benefits to any country in immigration. And we need to be looking at the numbers. And we've got this great bogeyman of immigration, these large, great, vast numbers of people that are causing us all problems. And I think we need to be careful as well. In Ireland at the moment, we have a huge intersect between social issues around housing and healthcare and immigration, and both are getting hitched together. But if we look at, you know, the numbers for the end of 2022, for example, 13% of immigrants were in primary education. That was 8,654. You know, are we having an issue with those people? 7% were in secondary education. That was 6,875. Are we having an issue with those children? Who is it? And I'd like...
Well, I think really what it boils down to is, if we're going to have an open conversation, busloads of fellas being moved into rural areas with no consultation, no services, and no supports. And I don't think it's unreasonable for people in a... or is it? For in an area to go, well, what's going on here? What does this mean? What will be the implications be? Who are they? Why has no one told us who the... You know what I mean? I mean, that's quite a human response. I don't think that's born in any space that's racist or anti-this or anti-that. I mean, that's where the issue...
Nor was I suggesting that it was. But what I was saying at the beginning of this still stands, that we don't have the correct kind of messaging. You're absolutely right that, you know, if you've got a busload of folk arriving in a small town, there needs to have been something done to scaffold that as a situation. People need to be informed. Local areas need to be consulted. And we need to know exactly who it is, what it is, why it is, and where it is. But what I'm saying is we have
to
be careful.
You see, the thing is, and I mean, you know, like, I know you're a member of the Labour Party, but your justice spokesperson said that the motion, which was to... deal with the reckless immigration policy in inverted commas, which could potentially cover what we're talking about. Aidan O'Riordan said the motion was the lowest common denominator politics with the lowest common denominator political group. That doesn't sound like conversation or let's have a chat or let's come up with solutions. That's like saying, shut up, stop talking about this because you're a racist.
I don't agree with
that. I'm not actually saying that that's what Aidan was suggesting, but someone might feel they could take that interpretation.
But I think if we come back to the point already that I've made, we need to be having grown-up conversations. And I don't believe that the motion that was brought to the Dáil last week was a grown-up motion. Mm. I think it was opportunistic, and I think it was hitching a lot of problems to an already hugely inflamed situation that we do need to be having grown-up conversations about, both in our political arenas and in society at large. And I'm going to come back again to, you know, a lot of the problem, as you rightly identify, is around messaging and around the governmental messaging in this, and it's not happening.
Okay.
And I do absolutely get people's concerns with large groups coming into small communities that are not prepared for it.
Yeah, but I think just like an understanding is not going far enough. People want sort of something a little more than that, but that's not in your gift or mine. That's not a criticism of you, Michael. Brendan Byrne, what's your view?
Well, first of all, I'm at a disadvantage. I didn't actually listen to the debate or follow it in any great stead. But I can safely say that throughout every village and town in Donegal, as we're talking here today, there are concerns amongst the communities in terms of the scale of immigration. And there are debates going on within our communities as to, was it right to bring 50 or 60 immigrants into a small community? Was it right to take over the entire hotel within the town or village? And the problem we're having as a society, as I see it, we're not having an immigration debate. And from what little I did follow of the debate that was in the Dáil, I don't think we're mature enough to have a fully fledged debate. Now, the reality is we are all from families of immigrants of some nature, but we emigrated to earn a living. That whole dynamic has changed in the last year because of war, and previous to that, because of displacement, sometimes on the grounds of environmental displacement and that. So we have, in our time, seen a great change in immigration. And the next 10 years will bring even further changes. You have more and more disturbance in the Middle East and in African countries, as well as the Ukraine, which will probably go on for another 5 years. The fact that you had that kind of language coming from the Labour Party would frighten me. Because until we have a proper debate in our own parliament building and right throughout our communities, there's going to be no better understanding of immigration. If any one of the four of us that are online here think that there aren't concerns in the communities, then we're deluding ourselves. There are massive concerns in each and every village and town in Donegal and elsewhere. And at that... Sorry.
Brendan, do you think the use of reckless immigration policy is an acceptable thing for TDs then to be bringing a motion to the Dáil on?
I'm very tolerant. I would let people use their language, let them explain it, and then you put your own argument forward on a more professional, better worded and better use than the word reckless, if you have an issue with reckless. But what I'm talking about... The fact that in the last Sunday's opinion poll, so much of the population just simply don't want to talk about immigration tells me that we have a greater crisis than we're realizing. And I'm probably self-conscious that what little I have said here will probably bring me into the crosshairs of some keyboard warrior somewhere. But I'm actually pro-immigration, but I do believe that we have a crisis growing here in Ireland. We saw manifestations of that in the recent riots. We can see it on social media ourselves if we're foolish enough to follow that. And
see, that's why I think that's, you make a very important point there, because the conversation is happening in different guises all over the place. Like, Michael, like, let it put it to you. I think what the public would want is an open and clear conversation. Say, for instance, Brendan referenced hotels. There's still well over 50% of Donegal's hotel accommodation taken up with refugees, okay? Then you have pressure on the hospital, pressure on GPs, pressure on the schools. And then you have people being snuck into communities as people may see it. Now, I'm not saying that's the case, but as people may see it. Then we have an increasing problem with homelessness here in Ireland. And also, say, for instance, in Donegal, then you have people with defective concrete homes who are struggling to find alternative accommodation while their homes are being fixed, at the same time being angry with the government because they don't really believe that they've responded adequately to the housing crisis. Now, you can't just leave all of that there to bubble over and not discuss it and not come up with a plan and not say what we're going to do. Well, what does 24 look like? What does 25 look like? What does 26 look like? You know, you can't keep referencing the pandemic. You can't keep referencing Ukraine. You can't keep referencing the climate. You have to also, I think people want, is solutions, information. What's going to happen? What is the plan? Where are we going from here? And as soon as, and I think that, for what it's worth, what I think the Rural Independent Group did themselves a disservice in phrasing the debate as they did. It might have actually been a really important opportunity to tease all of these issues out, you know, and put it up to the opposition as well and say, well, what is your plan, or what would you do if you're in government? Do you know what I mean? Because these conversations have to happen, Michael.
You've got a couple of things there that I want to come back to. First of all, the Labour Party is not a government party. We're a party in opposition. So, you know, we can't take responsibility for all of that stuff, much and all as I would like to. And you've referenced Micah there. So I'm going to come back on that one and say that Labour was the first party to call in the Dáil for 100% redress and has continued to do so. I am not, nor is the Labour Party for a second, denying any of the issues that are in Irish society today. We are consistently calling for more and better housing, more affordable housing, even down to the planning amendments that Ivana Becic put in a couple of weeks ago. You know, we are the party of this kind of stuff, but we are also a party of equality and respect. Now, I would not have chosen to respond to how the independent, the rural TDs phrased it in the way that my colleague from the Labour Party did. However, I have a huge issue in an already, I mean, we're three fairly reasonable folk having a chat here at the moment. And, you know, it's clear that it brings out passions. In an already hyper-inflamed situation, the last thing that we need to, because remember, people still have, albeit a modicum of trust in our political system, it's still there. So if somebody in your political system is saying that the immigration policy is reckless, then that is throwing petrol on a huge bonfire as it is. And I'm not okay with that. And nor is the Labour.
I don't think it's thrown petrol on a fire. It's an opinion expressed by a democratically elected TD. Now, would I use those words if I were a TD? Probably not. But he's still articulating a view of his electorate, I would imagine.
Nobody is denying that for a second, Brendan. Everyone is acknowledging that there is huge concerns. Huge concerns, and rightly concerns, as we talked about at the top of the show. We're talking about concerns in rural communities and small communities and right across Ireland in larger communities as well, where the messaging and how this is being managed is a problem.
With due respect, your TD didn't address the concerns. He tackled the man instead of the ball by retorting in the fashion that he did. And this is the point that I spoke to very early on in this debate. There's so much fear of having an actual debate about immigration. That, to me, convinces me that we have a greater social problem than we actually realise. Debate this, then we are really in worse trouble than I expect.
As I said earlier on, in the poll last week, 46% of people are afraid to say what their actual opinion is. This is a problem, and we need to be having a proper debate.
Now, listen, you'll struggle to find someone as articulate in a debate as Brendan Byrne is, as much as it pains me to say. No, I only joke. But even Brendan, in really quite measured comments, feels he has to throw in the caveat that it might attract the ire of some. That is really actually the space that we're in, and I get exactly what Brendan is saying, and I try and walk a line here to facilitate conversations, but, you know, someone from one particular side or another might perceive me to be, you know, not hosting this in a balanced way. Another thing coming down to the crux of it again, and this is, I hope people understand, it's not an opinion, it's to facilitate conversation. You used a very important word there, equal or inequality or equality. And what comes through an awful lot on programmes like this by some, and I don't know how much of the population that represents, is that a lot of people feel there's an inequality, but not perhaps in the direction that you feel. That there's an inequality in terms of if you're struggling for housing here, if you're struggling support, if you're struggling to put food on the table, if you're struggling to heat the house, that there's a lot of people who have lived here all their lives or moved here 20, 30 years ago that feel actually the country's not equal to them. The inequality is actually pitched the other direction rather than what you might believe it to be, Michael. Do you get that?
I do. I'm just curious as the direction of this conversation is going, because this all started about a comment that a Labour Party member made about a debate that was held in the Dáil. And I'm somehow coming out of this that I am not on the side of the Irish people.
Not at all. No. Listen, it's you're not here, and we didn't invite you on to speak on behalf of the Labour Party or defend government policy or to defend the direction of the company. I'm interested in you as an individual, in your opinion. So I'm not trying to paint you into a anti-Irish, pro-immigration corner. So if you feel that that's the case, get out of it quickly, because it's not my intention. It's not my intention, Michael.
If principle of equality is like the scales of justice. It must remain equal. And that is where we have the difficulty. We're all talking about equality, including myself in this debate, where we're not debating it from the perspective of those communities that are expressing difficulties in terms of displacement of their hotel in their community, or in terms of the sheer volume of people that are coming into their community. Maybe there's fears, maybe there's better effort needs to be made to explain all that. Mm. But when we talk about equality, and we need to be responsible when we talk about equality, there's an onus of responsibility for all those that are coming in here, the immigrants, but there's an equal responsibility for our communities and our people. And if our communities and people are beginning to realise or are of the mind that they're not being listened to, then that is part of the problem.
Yeah, Michael, I want to give you a bit of space just to clear up where your stance and where you're at, by the way, because I don't want you to feel in any way this is unfair.
I don't. I'm fine. Honestly, but you know, it's just I think it comes back to my very original points here, that we need to be very careful about what we're doing here, and one of the things that we have to be really, really careful and responsible of in these kind of debates is that we are not hitching social issues around housing and health and education that are huge problems in our country and have to.
You see, I think Michael, I get you. I get where you're coming from. And again, this is not to be argumentative. It's a conversation. I often point out on this program, because I think facts matter, that a lot of the problems that we have in this country, homelessness, for an example, you look at the 2018 homelessness figures, there's still thousands of children without a home. We have, we've had historically very high rates of child poverty. I get exactly what you're saying, but it's not me that's sort of conflating or hitching things or the debate. It's the people feel, right? The people feel that right now, all of a sudden, you found this money, this resource, and this motivation to help people. I don't mind you doing that, but I still feel like I've historically not been looked after and feel that's unfair. So I think that's what's going out with some people in the public. I think that's the emotion, maybe. I don't know.
I think so. And that was the distinction that I was trying to draw the whole way through. And we in the Labour Party, because we've mentioned it so many times, I've mentioned Labour more times today than I think any time.
That's all right. Go on, carry on.
Before. have always been advocating for greater investment and resources for the people who are feeling hard done by at the moment. I suppose what I'm trying to do is say, I see, and the way I see it, because you're asking for my opinion, the way I see it is at the moment we have a huge concern, very rightly, throughout the country about emigration. And what I'm asking in public discourse is that we are careful that we don't allow too many things to be hitched onto that, and we arrive at the situation that we have with our nearest neighbours, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, and we need to be really careful around this conversation, and we need to deal in fact.
We do, of course, but the Britain left the EU pretty much on this issue. I mean, you know, you can talk about the NHS and everything else, but this is what people thought they were voting
for. Absolutely. So, you know, if we look at the situation in Britain, it's gotten worse, not better.
Yeah. A lot of people picking up on the statement you made about tackling the man instead of the bald man stroke woman, right, Brendan? And you see an awful lot of that in social media, and you have some time. But I feel it's kind of a new thing in politics, and you've been around politics for a long time, where, you know, it is about the personalities and the individuals rather than the issues themselves. And I sort of get a sense sometimes that almost, you know, the majority of the Dáil are kind of involved in this. It's about personal attacks, history, rather than actually, you know, getting to the crux of the problem. Is that just a perception, or even in the houses of the Dáil, do you think there's too much focus on the personalities and the man rather than the issues stroke the ball?
Absolutely. I think politics has been hollowed out completely, and we have personality-driven politics underlined by this social media craze. And you know, when you think of people that are in politics, and I respect them, I was in politics myself for a short while, but when you see what's going on in social media in terms of politicians and the vitriol that's against them, but unfortunately, when you see it in the Houses of Parliament of our state, that you have a massive issue, and don't get me wrong, emigration is a massive issue, and there's two sides, there might be multiple sides to it, but when you see the tit for tat that went on between the rural independent and a member of the Labour Party, then that makes me pretty mad, because what you have is a substantive issue that warrants debate, warrants intellectual debate, and all they were doing was tit for tatting amongst themselves and ignoring the issue. But that's probably because, back to that opinion poll, so much and so many of us are afraid to open our mouth about immigration.
All right, okay, listen, we're listening to the views there of Michael McLaughlin, Branch Secretary of the Donegal Labour Party, not a government spokesperson, of course, and Brendan Byrne, CEO of the Irish Fish Brokers, Processors and Exporters, who says he was in politics for a short while but clearly never left. We'll be back with more from both of them after this break. Good morning to Kathleen, Linda, Charlie, Frankie, Sarah, and the rest of you watching the show. Just to remind you, you can watch the programme daily and today, in fact, on our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland. That can be on your smart TV, your Fire Stick, across your mobile devices. And we're also, of course, on Facebook. Right, so without necessarily returning to that issue, I feel sometimes we're chasing our tail or going round in circles, not us here, but us as a nation. What is the appropriate way, and I'll start back with you, Brendan, what is the appropriate way then that we can have conversations about the various issues that are going to come up as we move forward? You know what I mean? It's not just going to be this. It could throw in climate crisis there, throw in any future sort of medical emergencies, God forbid, if they ever were to revisit our shores. If we can't seemingly sort of come to some agreement in the social media space, and there's a lot of mud flinging and attacking the man stroke woman in the Dáil, it's kind of worrying. Was there a reset needed? How are we going to resolve our national issues moving forward?
Well, my own personal view is that I think the Dáil has become irrelevant. It's become completely controlled by the government of the day in terms of the debates that are taking place. And this has happened really since the early noughties. Prior to that, you had a more robust Dáil, which articulated the views and the concerns of the community. That's the purpose of having a national parliament. But since the early noughties onwards, you had a change of set where the agenda of the Dáil is completely dominated by the government of the day, whatever makeup that government is of. And until you have a situation that that the oil reflects the views of the people, you're going to have this vortex. And this is what we have. And it could, we're talking about immigration just now. In 2 months' time, it could be healthcare. After that, it could be education. But we're not having a working Dáil, as I see it. That's one of the first things. And the second thing is, in terms of immigration, not to double back on it, but the issue, as I see it, was that the EU, which is the EU Commission, who are totally unelected, told Ireland, well, you must take 1.something%, not doing any socioeconomic study, not doing a capacity study. Could that small member state cater for that? So you have an absence of a national parliament, and you have this undemocratic institution in the EU called the EU Commission dictating a lot. So even though we're a democratic sovereign state, as I see it, there's very little natural debate occurring. Everything is controlled.
Whether it's perception or reality, Michael McLaughlin, you throw in the new hate speech laws and you know, that's probably just even going to strengthen someone listening who might have the same views as Brendan Byrne, because, you know, we talk about misinformation and disinformation, but it's really never been clear to me who is the judge and jury of misinformation. Like, is misinformation just the opposite of what a government's saying? Is misinformation the opposite of what science says? I don't know. What have you any concerns in that regard?
I have very many concerns, and you've taken us into an interesting sphere. I think a lot of this kind of stuff can be, for want of a better phrase, traced into the rise of populism and populism in politics. And I suppose, you know, if you look at the mechanisms of Trump and to a lesser extent Johnson, we got into, I think politics was probably always about manipulating the narrative. But I think we've gone, we've thrown out a lot of the rules and the honesty and the integrity that was in that. And I think that's a big problem. But I want to dial back a moment, because we were talking about altercations in the Dáil. And I think we see this globally politically as well. And I think one of, and possibly the rise of social media and the fact that that personal interaction is now gone, we've lost concept, and I think this can be applied to lots of things, of humanity. And the person on the other side of the receiving end of this is actually a human. And we've lost sight of the fact of respect and of appreciating differing opinions. There's nothing wrong with differing opinions and healthy debate. But when we get into this, where we are now at this extreme level of narrative manipulation by any means possible. And, you know, you talk about truth and mistruths, or, you know, what is truth anymore? I think that's very difficult to distill. And as we move forward in a more social media dominated era, anyone can manipulate the truth and do. And I think that's a huge concern.
Yeah. And you make a really interesting point there about, there was a time, and it's not that long ago, I think maybe, you know, 10 years ago, whereby you could have an emotive argument where you could cite sort of the plight of an older person or the plight of a child, and then that would sort of maybe reset the debate or refocus minds. And now it's almost like those people, well, so that's just the way it is. That's collateral damage of my opinion or my point, which is really worrying. And I don't see, how do we go back? Because there is, I do sometimes get a sense that the national debate in the Dáil has sort of found itself in a race to the bottom of how debates are conducted on social media. In other words, how do you stay relevant? Well, you have to drag yourself almost down to how.
I think in a funny way, it's almost the 24-hour news cycle that's, you know, so we need to have a new headline every 5 minutes. And what it's becoming more and more almost sensationalist. And that's very definitely in politics, who's going to grab the next headline, whatever it is. And we're not looking, but it comes back to further thinking, we're not looking at joined up and long-term thinking. It's almost the short-term goal of being, as you say, relevant.
Yeah, okay. Well, when we're trying to sort things out like housing and health, can you do that in a five-year cycle of a government anyway? But anyway, and then whilst all these conversations happen, there's all other things going on, of course. We heard this week from the chair of the Donegal Joint Policing Committee. He stressed the dangers of drug debts and the risk of people being dragged into crime because of their drug use. Councillor Jay McMonagle says families are being threatened, and in many cases, families are borrowing money to settle debts incurred by children or other relatives because they are being intimidated. We had one mother contact Highland Radio, this show in fact, outlining her family story as a result of one of her children taking drugs, a harrowing tale. Another parent told the show that her daughter had to go to Australia. She was taking drugs, she got herself off the drugs, but she was constantly being bullied and harassed and friends encouraging her to take drugs again. And they had the decision to make, let her go to Australia with no one to keep an eye over her, but she's drug free, or keep her here and potentially watch her dragged back into that world again. It's not just a line. Now, that's a terrible way of phrasing it, no pun intended. It's not just sort of a line now, Michael, whereby, you know, drugs are easier to get than a pizza. It's a reality. Anyone on Snapchat or Facebook or wherever, you can get them. Lots and lots of people are taking drugs. And it's just an absolutely awful situation. And I don't know how we come back from it.
I agree. I think it's a really worrying situation. And I think the normalization of the conversation, you know, this was something that we talked about, you know, not even 10 years ago around here, with certainly less frequency than we do now. I think it's a huge, huge problem. I mean, coming back to the issues with drug dealers and harassment and whatever, I know that there is the drug recovery and intimidation program with The Guardian. I think, you know, that's probably a place to start. But I think it's a hugely difficult thing. And I think tied in with that, we're into huge issues in the mental health space and an addiction support space. And I think we're playing catch up. And I think we need to be hugely developing that very quickly to work alongside to deal with what is a huge problem.
Yeah, Brendan, I mean, the public are looking to the Gardaí, who are under-resourced. This county is absolutely massive, you know, and you'd almost need a guard in every village with an undercover colleague to try and get to the bottom of this. Is there an obvious solution that you see? Because I think it's 3.8 million euro of drugs have been seized in Donegal in the last year. But if the truth be told, the majority of that fell on the lap of the guards because they washed up on the shore, if you know what I mean. And that's not having a go at the guards. But if we didn't sort of have that, it would be much less. But we know there's lots of drugs out there, Brendan. What is the solution if there is one?
Well, the first part of any solution is we need to recognise how bad it is. And the reality is, and you said it at the outset, there's drugs in every village and town in Donegal as I speak here. And not alone that, probably unless we get a handle on it, within the next 5 years, there'll be drugs in every second house in Donegal. We are where America was in the 1970s and 1980s. And if you look at Bruce Springsteen's songs about Philadelphia in those years, that's where we are. And did it start last year? No, it didn't. 10 years ago, you could see this coming. And until we get a handle on it, and that was the question you asked me, how do you get a handle on it? Well, the first thing you need to do is bring in draconian laws in order to start reversing this. You know, we can't blame the guards. The guards will arrest them when they get them. They'll go to the courthouse in Letterkenny or Donegal Town. They'll probably be home faster than the guards with a rap on their knuckles or a rap on their wrist. And they'll be back on the street on Saturday nights if there's a disco back here in Letterkenny or Donegal Town. And that's what's going on. And until we as a state say enough is enough and start putting in laws that are going to be draconian and are going to hurt, but there's no easy way back. And
but that's not going to be through imprisonment, is it? Because our prisons are full. The majority of people going to prison are only there for a couple of months. Is it really rehabilitation? You know, we do see an awful lot of people that do a couple of months in prison, come out, go back in again. Do we not need to sort of treat this as a disease rather than a crime then?
Well, the first part of rehabilitation is that it has to be a deterrent for other people to slide into this drugs culture. So I'm not advocating that we jail, although a good number of them need to be jailed damn fast. And we know, and each of us on this call know in our own town or village who's pushing drugs. But there's no use in knowing it. There need to be a law that, number one, deals with him separately to the poor, unfortunate individuals that slid into this culture of taking drugs and from that developed a dependency. But if you look at where we are, at night, you could have a scenario in the Donegal division of the guards that you may have as little as 5 or 7 guards on covering the entire division. Well, that doesn't tell me any government is taking the whole drugs culture serious, because that's when drugs move. Although they do move in daylight, principally, you'll have drug dealing at night. So look at there has to be a full assessment of where we are.
I just want to back hitch a wagon to Brendan's point there, Michael, because another thing that came up at the recent Joint Policing Committee meeting was the lack of Garda checkpoints. And Senior Gardaí kind of effectively, I think if I'm reading the comments correctly, effectively said that they're not that effective. There's been a big reduction in the amount of them, that they're only really effective for 15 minutes. And, you know, if we don't have many checkpoints around the place, you know, what is deterring criminals or what is deterring the movement of drugs around the place? Do you know, like, we can't just focus on it being driving instances here. Checkpoints serve a purpose far beyond them, but we're seeing a drastic reduction in the amount of checkpoints. And the, what some might see troubling is Senior Gardaí actually don't really see them as an effective tool, it would seem.
I think I'd like to broaden that even further and say that visibility of Gardaí in general is something that we could do with things. I was having an interesting conversation with someone in Dublin recently, just after the events of a couple of weeks ago, who said, look, we're back to 1980s where wholesale crime, shoplifting in the state that it was and all the rest was going on, and we don't have a big enough visible Garda presence. And I think that's certainly a big issue. And I think, you know, yes, definitely. I think checkpoints and visibility, if you're sure that you're going to get off with something, then I think there's a good chance that you're going to give it a shot. Whereas if you think there's a chance that you might be caught, it might be some form of.
But they're so infrequent, I think, you know, and listen, if you drive or if you're about the place, you don't really expect to come across a checkpoint. There's not enough of them to think that, oh, there could be one and I could get caught. Brendan, did you want to come back there?
Have checkpoints not become irrelevant because of WhatsApp and Facebook? A guard puts a checkpoint at the end of the road. Within 30 seconds, it's going to be known throughout the county that there is one there. So this is why I've said the toolkit that we've had up to now is completely redundant for the society we're in. But in terms of the laws that we have, and I don't advocate jailing everyone, but there's going to have to be consequences for us or those that are taking drugs. And that means that, you know, in terms of employment and in terms of support and rehabilitation. But the first thing we need to do is we need to get the toolkit. And I'm talking about every organization, from your place of employment to your place of sport and recreation. All this has to feed into it, because the drug culture has got completely out of hand, particularly in the last 10 years.
Well, because two of our sort of, some might say, because of our reactionary way of policing, that really for the next 2 or 3 years, pretty much every graduate out of Temple Moor is probably going to end up in Dublin, because that's where the cameras are and that's where the riots were. And that's not, we need to look at policing beyond that, do we? Go ahead, please, Michael.
Well, I'm not convinced that policing is our only answer and solution here. And I think that, you know, education is something that we need to be looking at. And I grew up in a time where, you know, we had visits, and I don't know if they still go on or not, but we had visits from the Gardaí who actually talked about what happened, you know. And I think there's lots of softening around opinions of drugs. I remember growing up in absolute terror of, you know, I remember reports of the young girl who died in the UK who had taken ecstasy, and that sort of influenced, you know, everything. And we've moved, the opinion has shifted, and the sort of the general court of the dangers of drug taking has slipped. And I think we need to go back here to have a reset social mindset that says this is a problem and this is dangerous.
Sounds like we need another plan. Sounds like we need another plan.
Incidentally, I was speaking to a teacher. Those things that Michael referred to are still ongoing, where you bring in a guard and they speak to the class or speak to the youth club. And I was speaking to a teacher very recently that told me, in actual fact, I think the guard was only educating them about drugs. So we need to, if we're going to get serious about this, you need to have random drug testing as people are coming out of nightclubs, as people are coming out of pubs or out of any kind of social venue, and that it's an offence to have drugs in the body. That'll be a first start. And gradually from that then, if you have the right suite of laws, you'll handle this. Otherwise, we are going to lose a third of a generation to a drugs culture.
All right, let's see. We'll be back with more after this break. All right, so caller says, the dogs on the street around Donegal are all now chatting about how media outlets like Highland Radio are delegated to and constrained on their perceived stance on political health issues because of the massive disconnect between what's being broadcast versus what they can say going on in their daily lives, which we've literally been speaking about this for the last these issues for the last 50 minutes. Now, I'm not. I do think sometimes some of these debates are avoided or muted in other spaces, but certainly not here. Good morning, Greg. If your panel have never done drugs, what are they talking about, or why are they talking about something they know nothing about? More draconian laws he wants. That's Brendan. Should we bring back the draconian laws of arresting gays and homosexuals and putting them in prison? I don't see the jump there from one issue to the other. But another, on the draconian laws, America, says Charlie on Facebook, Brendan, America has the biggest prison population in the world and the biggest drug problem. More draconian laws, absolute rubbish.
Well, of course, I'm glad I'm kind of prompting a debate. But first of all, look at how are we going to handle this drugs crisis? I don't think anyone in Donegal is denying that there's a crisis there. Talking and counselling is not going to work. Random checkpoints is not going to work. So we have to take a decision. Do we allow it to continue, or do we try to save a generation, is what I said just before the break. And we have to get real that there's a crisis that's going out of proportion. And we referenced America early. And look at exactly what's happening in America now with fentanyl. America's slipping into its second drug crisis.
I don't think people actually are more general. I don't think people are actually quite generally aware of the impact fentanyl has. I mean, it's turning areas of major cities literally into zombie zones. It's absolutely unbelievable what's going on.
And life is lost. If someone gets hooked on fentanyl, your life is destroyed probably within 3 months, as I understand it from reading the various articles that's about this. But this is a much serious debate than the two comments that you just read out. And I respect the people that made their comments. They generally feel that that's as simple as what they're articulating. But I'm motivated from the perspective that I can see in my community and I can see beyond in the county that we are losing very talented people into the trap of drugs, and the state has a responsibility to step in there. And I use the word draconian. Maybe it's different laws where you have random testing other than being in your car.
And I think Michael, when we talk about it, or when someone texts in, and I mean this with absolute respect, and I have great respect for everyone's views like Brendan, I think if you have a child who over the course of a month or 6 weeks completely changes, that person becomes unrecognisable. And then you have to go to the credit union to borrow $4,000 or $5,000 to pay off some fellow who's threatening guys coming up from your view's going to be different. Now, if you've got three of children who are exceeding in every area of life and are perfectly happy and have got great respect for you, you're going to go, what are you on about, draconian laws? Do you know, like, and I think we all need to try and get our heads into other people's spaces as well. Is that what we're missing?
I think there's something about the difference between lived experience and theory. But I think, you know, we need to look. We've all talked about it being a big problem. We need to look further upstream and ask why. We need to be looking at what is causing this. And I don't think it's all about the very simplistic notion that someone goes out one night and gets handed a drug and takes a drug and is suddenly hooked. I think we need to be careful with that one. I think it's much further up. And I think we need to look at areas where drug use and misuse is a problem and look at the fundamental reasons why. And we need an intervention earlier. That I think by the time we get to laws, we're too late. The ship has sailed.
Can I say with respect, though, I think really, you know, now that drugs is used so broadly across society, you know, regardless of people's backgrounds, there are people within all different people, social backgrounds, whatever it is, now are in the same boat. Is it not really as simple that these are very addictive substances and it's a multi-billion euro industry? And until we disrupt that, there's going to be supply and there's going to be customers. The days where it was sort of, you know, rich yuppies or whatever they used to be called in Dublin, or it was underprivileged areas. Now, there's a huge problem, the IFA says, in farming communities. of farming community. You know, people who are primarily based on the farm getting drugs shipped into them via Snapchat, and it gets them through the whatever straight. You know, it's right across the board. I wish. Listen, we need more time, but I don't have it. Michael, listen, as always, it's great to have you on. I hope you don't feel that you've been portrayed in any unfair way.
No, not at all. I'm more robust than that.
No, I get you. I get you. But I also, in fairness, is incredibly important to me as well. So thank you very much, Michael, for your time.
All right.
Michael McLaughlin and Brendan Byrne, as always, great to have you on the programme. Have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you very much, Greg.
Take care. Brendan Byrne, who is the CEO of the Irish Fish Processors and Exporters. Okay, that's where we have to leave it for now because our Friday panel ran over a little bit. So we do have one more break to take before the news and obituary notices. But we'll come back with more content, more comments after these.